the crazy people track me down.
Hello.
I must say I admire your new office, especially the tasteful French doors.
Thank you. Is that what those are?
Yes, they are.
All right. With Venetian blinds that are...
Uh-huh.
And you can tell where somebody... They bought the Venetian blinds that are on my office door. Now, you can tell that that's what those are, right? The ones with the little turny, the little rod that you turn and they swivel up and down. Right, Venetian?
Yes.
But you can tell that they bought those, like, 15 office occupants ago, and they've never bothered to replace them. There was a sale at Target or something. And they just outfitted all the offices at once. And all so the Venetian blinds that are on my new office, we'll talk about that in a second, they're all bent all to hell and whatnot. They don't really close. And so then I'm trying to make a have out of a have not. I'm sitting there going, this is how pathetic I am to look as though I'm some kind of a player. I'm actually going through the Venetian blinds one by one, and they're like the thin little... flatty metal kind, like really, really bad aluminum siding. And I'm going through the Venetian blinds one by one the other night, trying to straighten them out, trying to, you know, because they're all bent, and so I'm trying to bend them back the opposite way so they can close or something. Didn't really work. All right.
Well, you have plenty more room in there to accept audition tapes now.
Yes. You are a bad person, Tim Riley. You know what you are, Tim Riley? You are an instigator. That is what you are, sir. And here's the thing. Sarah labels me as the instigator all the time, and I believe that you do just as much instigating as I do, but you escape under the cloak of newsman. I believe that your function as news director at the Ministry of Information here at the Rick Emerson Show...
I ask the tough question.
That is true. But I do believe that allows you to get away... with pushing me towards all kinds of discussions and observations that I probably should not be having on the air.
Oh, that could be.
Don't drop off your air check on a Friday. I'm just going to say that.
Here's a little, cover it with stickers.
It's a little free radio advice from me to you.
And at least use a word processor. And not use construction paper like it's a first grade art project.
And if you're writing with a marker, you know, feel free to use some whiteout to just scribble the letter that you mess up.
And you may want to listen to your CD before presenting it so the hiss isn't louder than your voice.
The best part of all this is that Tim frequently punctuates all these observations by then furiously and cattily turning the page of his newspaper. So that is all I have to say about that. Wham!
Well, and I was reading about Ron Livingston previewing his new series, Standoff.
Boy, you know, let me just tell you this. I saw the one sheet. Mm-hmm. I saw the one sheet for the new Ron Livingston series. And I believe it's about a team of hostage negotiators. Is that right? Is that what it says? Or am I making that up?
I'm looking, but I don't see anything about it.
I believe that it's about it, because I'm a big fan of that movie, The Negotiator, with Kevin Spacey and, what's his guts? Snakes on a Plane. Sam Jackson? And I admit that there's dramatic material to be mined from a hostage negotiator. Did anybody see the movie The Negotiator?
No.
It's a great film. It's sort of like Crimson Tide in that... they take what could be a very formulaic thriller, and there's actually moments in, like Crimson Tide, which is Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman, which is also a great film. I remember seeing Crimson Tide, and even though it all ends happily, there were moments in that film where it was so tense and so stressful. I remember sitting there in the theater watching Crimson Tide and realizing I never wanted to see the movie again, because it was like someone was reaching inside and just taking my intestines and tying them into French knots. It was very unpleasant. Same thing with The Negotiator, where it's Sam Jackson who is a hostage. See, it's ironic because he's a hostage negotiator who ends up taking hostages.
With a heart.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, but that's what the Ron Livingston series is apparently about, where it's a whole team of hostage negotiators. And see, one of them, I believe it's Ron Livingston, he plays fast and loose with the rules, and he goes with his gut instinct. Meanwhile, but his partner, see, this is the real twist, his partner goes by the book. Also, there's a blonde woman that I think he had sex with at one point, and now there's all this sexual tension between the two of them.
So the person who goes by the book... he goes by the book.
No, Ron Livingston plays fast and loose with the rules.
Okay.
Not unlike you, Tim Riley.
All right.
All right. What's that talking about? Yeah, I don't know. It's 503-733-2970. It's Friday, and welcome to Day 12. 503-733-2970. In just a moment, we'll bring on the mailman Chris, the official stenographer of the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll find out what I'm going to claim to get to today, and then, in fact, never get to. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. An exciting new development in my life. We'll talk about that. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. It's not really even equal this time. It's a lot more the taketh than the giveth. So we'll talk about that in a second. 503-733-2970. You can also email rick@rickemerson.com. Webpage is up and running. SarahXDillon.com, TimRileyMedia.com, RickEmerson.com, and, of course, myriad MySpace pages, and Nicole Richie is functionally retarded. I'm looking at this picture on Sarah's screen right now. Nicole Richie is, in fact, a mongoloid.
She's the queen of fashion, though, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. You know what you put up on your page the other day that I've been missing? It was that picture of Tara Reid making the retarded orgasm face. And you know what I'm talking about. The moment when one of God's special children has that...
I put that up for you. I knew it was your favorite.
when one of God's...
Don't make the noise.
One of the least of God's creatures experiences that special moment with someone, and it's just sort of a... Just sort of a kind of sound. And the face that accompanies that. Except it's Tara Reid and her uneven bosoms. You can go to SarahXDillon.com and find all the instructions about how to see that. Okay, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, our good friend, official stenographer of the Rick Emerson radio program, Mailman Chris. How are you, sir?
Not bad.
Oh, wait, hold on. Let's welcome now.
Postman is the person in your neighborhood.
That makes me smile. All right. How is your morning going today? This is your day off, right? You're just lounging about. All right.
It's my day off, and I was just heading back from downtown Portland.
Thank you. I wouldn't know anything about that.
No.
Let me ask you this. Doesn't it seem to you like we're... And I read an article the other day, because it's very fashionable to say that the post office is going to be going out of business because of email and so forth. Here's why that's not true. I was thinking about this the other day, and I read an article that buttressed this conclusion of mine. Because I was buying some stuff the other day online. I was on the eBay, and I was buying some items, and I realized that actually probably most people have made up for it. The people who use email the most probably make up for the postage that they no longer spend on letters by buying crap online and then having it sent to their house. You guys are probably having to deliver a lot more packages than you ever used to.
A lot of packages and a lot of what we refer to as bulk rate mail.
And what is that?
Or pre-sorted standard bulk rate.
Oh, that's spam, isn't it?
Well,
that's junk mail.
Catalogs and yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's junk mail. That's because when you buy something and then they sell your information to everybody under the sun.
Yeah.
So, all right. I had some point that I was going to make about this. Oh, yeah, here's what it is. It's that the post delivers Monday through Saturday because you guys already work staggered shifts, right? So you work Monday through Friday, and then you work Tuesday through Saturday, and then you work whatever. I don't understand. The post office really had to ramp it up and get their act together and be delivering 7 days a week. I would gladly pay. I mean, look, you guys raised the price of stamps, and I understand this was not your fault, but the price of stamps go up like every 5 minutes anyway. You guys are already delivering on Saturday. It's a brave new world. You got to compete with all these other delivery channels out there. It is high time that the USPS join the rest of the world and be open on Sunday, my friend. Is there... No, I'm just... I mean, it's more job security for you. Is because then I would be less tempted to use alternate delivery methods. I would be less tempted to use some other means to have something delivered to me. That's all I'm saying.
We're already trying to convince Congress not to move us down to 5-day delivery.
Is Congress talking about moving you down to 5-day delivery? I realize this is gripping to everybody out there, but this is just a thing that I think about sometimes.
George Bush and Congress recently had bills in Congress trying to deprivatize.
Yes.
The post office, so that there's all sorts of.
Well, that ain't right. Well, you just keep your ear to the ground. You let me know what develops.
Will do.
All right. Here's what we're going to get to today. We got a clergy watch coming up today. We have a snuff watch, and Tim Riley and I were having a discussion before the radio program today about whether anybody in the audience would actually know the person we were talking about. So a guy is dead. And we will find out if anybody actually knows who he is. You know what we should do is we should just get, before we even read the snuff watch later, we should get a bank of like three callers And then just have you say his name and then just go through the callers and see if anybody even knows who he is. That's okay. A good idea. That's interesting and relatable, sort of.
We can give away, like, a dream living room center.
Are you guys hearing a bunch of weird noises in the background?
It's refrigerator. No, it's my phone.
What is your phone doing? Is it?
I don't know.
Playing a harmonica.
Doesn't know I'm on the air and they keep calling.
Okay. Because how would they know you were on the air? It's... You know, that's really the misery, is there's no way that somebody out there in the Portland metro area can determine whether or not you're actually doing a goddamn radio program. Anyway, we'll get to zombie news today. Nanette Sosa from Israel, Bob Costantini from The Hill, they lied to us and said that Jim Roop was available. He apparently is not. So we were led astray by Laura Caviezel, the guest booker at CNN once again, who's busy picking out China patterns and coming up with new names for her future babies. Scott Daly will be here from FilmFeverRadio.com. We're going to be joined by our good friend Fatboy from Cord and Fatboy on KUFO later on for a very special, exciting announcement, which will surprise no one. And I believe that's it. Have you got all that? Sir,
I have a clergy watch, a snuff watch, a zombie watch, and that's Sosa, Bob Constantini, Scott Daly, and Fatboy.
It is so true. So we'll get to all of that, plus surprises and revelations along the way. So, and we'll check with you at the end of the program and find out what I have gotten to, what I have not gotten to. I will have a push-up, which brings the total like 500 or something to the Sarah Dillon Collective for each item not gotten to.
Well, I do concede you got the Rockstar Recap last night at the end of the program, so...
It's only 44.
44.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, thank you, Chris.
All right, talk to you later.
Bob Hostman is a person in your neighborhood.
We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you today?
Hello, I'm doing well. How are you?
Are you fine? Little hungover.
I'm doing better than you. Yes, I am a little hungover.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are doing better than me in that regard. We'll talk about that in just
a moment. Up. All no, right. I'm doing good.
Okay.
I'm a little poop.
Going to make it through?
Of course.
You know, to help that is a bottle of crisp, refreshing Viso.
It's chilling right now.
You know, the sad thing is, not that I'm on the air saying this in hopes that they will deliver more, but here's the thing.
Somebody stole all of our caffeinated Viso.
And it's going to become like Lord of the Flies in here. I'm telling you right now, as soon as that Viso runs out, we're all going to begin turning on each other.
That's
Tim. It's going to be like a brain-eating thing. It's all going to be very unpleasant. I have here, which I will now move closer to me so that no one can touch it. I have now, is this the last bottle of Will flavor?
No, I have, I'm freezing the last bottle of Will right now.
And don't get me wrong. There's a few boxes back there of the non-caffeinated kind, which is good. I do drink that on the week.
What good is that?
Here's what good the non-caffeinated Viso is. I don't mean to make it sound like we're disregarding like two-thirds of the guy's product line. It's not that at all.
I should try one of those.
You really should. All I'm saying is like if I'm
where
doing
are a, they kept?
They're kept. Well, we can't say because the there's some
they
someone in the
building. Them anyway.
You can
they're
slip
gone.
Me a note later when no
so
one
pass goes. You a note at study hall. If I'm taking like a bike ride, I'll have the non-caffeinated one. But that doesn't do any good when I'm on the air. And so forth. Well, anyway, so here's Sarah. And Tim Riley's working on the following stories today.
Rick Santorum calls a terrorist plot a wake-up call that this is a war without end. You are not completely safe, says the president. Suspicious packages churn out everywhere, and they turn out to be nothing for the most part. And a 57-year-old minister touched children inappropriately for 37 years.
Well, there you go. It's 503-733-2970 and whatnot. Oh, and we'll also, I'm not guaranteeing this, but we will also try to get to, we'll try to get to the top five rock and roll screams, because it's great, and because Scotty helped me put it together, and it really is pretty fantastic, if I do say so myself.
So, Rick Emerson, how was your night?
Well, my night was, see, here's the thing, my night was fine. You hear that phrase, blissful ignorance, sometimes, and you don't really truly appreciate what that means. See, here's the thing, now I've talked about this before, that my wife works a bizarre schedule. She, not unlike Chris, she works a rotating series of hours, but she works these 12-hour shifts. And I'm sorry, just looking down at the phone. I was wondering if somebody else had died. All the phones inexplicably started ringing, and I always think the Pope has been shot when that happened. Because I've been on the air sometimes when that happened, and then it always means that something somewhere has blown up.
Nobody ever talks about this Pope.
No, anyway. I don't even remember his name anymore.
Some guy used to be a Hitler youth. I don't remember his name.
yes. Anyway, so my wife works these rotating 12-hour shifts, and last night she went to, she works, and that is not a big secret, she works up in the hills, she works at OHSU, and we have two vehicles. We had two vehicles. I guess we theoretically still have the second one, but we have a car and we have a truck. And so she was working last night, 7 a.m., or 7 p.m. rather to 7:30. She went to work last night around 7:30. She got off this morning at 7:30 a.m. So I'm in bed. I get up around 7 o'clock to come to work. This morning I had overslept a little bit. It was about 7:15, and I don't have my phone with me, so I can't simulate the ringtone. But this, when my wife calls me, the ringtone is Rita Moreno from West Side Story, and because it's like her favorite movie and blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of a pleasant thing to wake up to. It's not very jarring. It's not whatever. So I'm in bed. It's 7:15. I'm sleeping away this morning, getting a little shut-eye. Phone rings, Rita Moreno. I pick it up, and I'm like, ah, it's my wife. I answer it. I say, hello, dear. How are you, and how are all things? And then this is what my wife says to me this morning. This is what you don't ever want to hear. I've talked before about the phenomenon of the after-midnight phone calls, which are always bad, because if you are called at 2 in the morning, someone is dead or in jail. You cannot change either of those things. You're probably not going to want to bail out whoever it is, and the relative is still going to be dead in the morning. So you just let the phone ring. No phone call after midnight is ever good news. I should have known that extended to phone calls at 7 a.m. So I answer the phone this morning. Again, my wife is still at work, having worked all night last night. I answer the phone. I say, hello, dear. How are you? How can I help you this morning? And she says, did you come and get the truck last night while I was at work? And at that moment, you don't even have to process it. You don't have to put anything together. At that moment, everything comes into your point is brought into stark relief. Instantly. Because you know that there's only two explanations. You know that the truck has either been towed away from her work for reasons unknown, or the truck has been stolen. Now, those who are longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson radio program, you will remember that this same truck, the same friggin' truck, was stolen last year. This is 2 years in a row. 2 years in a row that the same vehicle has been stolen from me. Sons of bitches.
It's unfair.
It really...
Give somebody else a chance.
They're not even rotating efficiently. I realize that police have to be at the airport stealing tubes of lipstick from flyers, but it really does seem like a more equitable allocation of police resources might be judicious at this point. Goddamn car thieves. Is there a lower creature on earth? Anyway, so I've just been repressing it all morning. I've been shoving it down and squashing it down. I shoved it all the way to the back of my brain, and then right before we were coming on the air today, I was scribbling notes to myself about today's program, and I said, oh, by the way, my truck was stolen again last night. And says, wasn't your truck just stolen a few months ago? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. It was stolen about 7 months ago. Been stolen again. Thank you for that. And okay, we went through the whole rigmarole. And this is this morning, by the way, no caffeine. This is the best and worst part about it. Is you all know that if I don't have all work and no caffeine makes Jack a cranky boy. And so it was this morning at like 7:15. I was asleep. She wakes me up. Suddenly I'm having to find the insurance number and the VIN number and all the processing so she can call the city and find out if it's been towed away. And you know in your soul it hasn't been towed away. You know that there's no reason on God's green earth why they would have gone to her place of work, to a space that is reserved for her, and taken away a truck that has her identification on the front of it. There's no reason it would have happened. You know the truck has been stolen. But still this morning, pre-coffee, pre-caffeine, pre-waking up, pre-processing any information correctly. I have to go and have to find all the facts. I have to give her the number. She has to call me back just to tell me that, in fact, the truck has been stolen. Gone. Truck stolen. Gone. Not even in front of my house. I don't know whether I feel... I mean, on the one hand, this is good, because if it had been stolen from in front of my house twice, then I would have been would have had to endure a whole day of comments slagging my neighborhood, which I don't really need at this point, because no one's really under the illusion that I live in some sort of palatial neighborhood anyway. But now But on the other hand, if the truck had been stolen from in front of my house in lovely Southeast Portland again, at least you understand it, right? This is when you move to a place like Southeast or St. John's, you're perhaps living in a house that Tim Riley is leasing to you. a house held together by bailing wire, apparently. At least you're sort of aware that that's going to happen. Like, you know that that's the deal, right? You understand that that's what's going to happen. It's like marrying a chick with a lot of piercings. You know she's going to end up screwing somebody else. It's just the way that it goes. You understand it comes with the deal. So it is with living in Southeast. This was not in Southeast Portland. This was in front of a government building. That's the very best part about it. Truck stolen from me. From in front of a government building. A government building, by the way, that is constantly and continually patrolled by guys with guns. It's like if you ever needed any more confirmation or proof that all of these so-called security measures The government is constantly instituting for our protection these days. Cameras, patrols, guys coming by to check all your ID and so forth. If you ever needed any sort of prima facie evidence that that's not working, the fact that my truck was stolen from in front of a government building that has, I think, 300 different cameras at various locations, there is actually a separate wing of the police force. There is actually a small branch of the police force that does nothing but patrol that area up by OHSU because that's where the Veterans Administration building is. I mean, it is a de facto wing of the military. Truck stolen from right in front of it last night. There you go. Thanks for playing. Oh, but I do have a new office with blinds that don't really work.
It is nice.
So it's all a wash, you know. There you go.
It's about ready. Time for a break.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the Ministry of Truth. Tim Riley's at the City Desk.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk,
I don't feel any better.
Tim Riley.
From higher down the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the Ministry of Truth. Tim Riley reporting.
This is why they need the government. This really is. I suddenly feel the urge to have the government patrolling my neighborhood even more frequently, and perhaps to have some sort of identification chip placed in the bones of our infants, so as they grow up to be truck-stealing bastards, we can find them. I'm sorry. This is exactly like when I was bitching about the wedding suit the other day. You sometimes, as yesterday's unpleasantness between Sarah and myself, you bring something up and then you feel better about it. You got it out. You've aired the problem out. You've lanced the wound. Everything is fine. The people go on with their day. Mm-hmm. Then there was that issue of the wedding suit where I talked about it for a whole, I don't know, like an hour and a half. I felt no better at the end of it. Just felt like I've been rolling around in my own ugly filth. That's what I feel like today, having just discussed the truck issue. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you feeling any better?
No, in no way am I feeling better. Not in any conceivable fashion.
Please describe this truck so we can be on the lookout for it.
What good is it going to do? See, I don't even know if I should do that, though.
Many of our listeners are mobile as we speak.
And car thieves. Here's the thing. I don't really know if I should describe it, and here's why I'll tell you that.
Oh, you don't want it stolen again once you get it back.
My house is easy to find, by the way. It's the one that now not only has a sofa, but has a non-working refrigerator on the lawn.
You cut it?
Well, no, it's got, I mean, the cord just goes to a frayed nub at the end.
Oh, you can always fix that.
I was talking, my neighborhood gets better by leaps and bounds with every passing day. I was talking yesterday about how my neighbors, who have moved, but they're now gone. I thought this was some sort of, I don't know, they were airing the sofa out. Perhaps they'd spilled some sort of party beverage on it, and they wanted to take it outside so it could air out and dry out and not stink up the inside of their house. No, they've apparently just gone. It's a huge sign on the, it's not like a lawn sign, but it's a sign on the inside of the window that says, like, this house now available for rent. They're gone. They're gone, baby. They're gone long time. House gone, empty. Well, sofa on the goddamn lawn for no reason.
Difficult to find good tenants.
I guess the deal is, like, I mean, didn't it used to be that if you were moving, like I've done this, where you had furniture, you had things you didn't want to bother to move, you decided you wanted a more Spartan lifestyle, what do? You leave those things behind in the house.
Like a methamphetamine lab.
That's exactly, except not that, because drugs are wrong, kids, and your body is a temple of Jesus.
Your landlord is not cleaning up the mess.
All I'm saying is, I have lived at places before, and I've told this story in Salt Lake where I lived with someone, which turned out to be ill-advised, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. by listening to me.
We all make bad decisions every now and then.
And so I lived with someone. She quickly realized that I was no one to be lived with. And then I lived by myself in the same place for like 6 months. And then eventually I was like, well, screw this. I got fired. I lost my job. I had to move in with some friends. And I was like, I couldn't afford it anymore. And I just realized, you know what? I got a radio job. I'm lugging all this crap from state to state, as Andy Travis would say, town to town, up and down the dial. What do I really need this bookcase for? Why do I need this coffee table, this pleatherette couch? For what do I need these things? The answer is I don't. And I was way behind in my rent anyway, so my friend Todd just came by with his pickup truck. I lived on the second floor. He pulled his truck up underneath my balcony one night at around 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I took my clothes, my books, and my music collection, tossed them down from the balcony into the back of his truck at 2 a.m, jumped onto the back of his truck, and we all just sped away like bandits and gypsies into the night. I left behind all my furniture. I left behind a bunch of my clothing. I left behind my television. I left behind my coffee table. And by the way, just so you don't think I'm a complete a-hole about this, I did also then forfeit my security deposit because I realized at some point the landlord was going to have to walk into my place. He was going to open the door and it was going to be like Man, there's going to be like Love Canal in there. It's going to be like Three Mile Island, just toxic waste and Taco Bell wrappers as far as the eye can see. So I understand that sometimes you're going to move and you're just going to leave your stuff behind because you want to start anew. You want to start fresh in some new locale. What you don't do is take all your furniture when you're moving and just decide, what is the logic? I don't even understand the logic. If you don't want to take the goddamn furniture, why don't you just leave it in the house? What is the logic to taking a sofa, which is not easy to get into a house, and which by definition is not easy to get out of a house? We all know this because we've all had to move one. What is the logic to taking the sofa, moving it from your living room, moving it like 35 feet out the door onto my lawn, and then vanishing into the night and leaving the sofa in front of my house?
Because the landlord is not going to take off from the security deposit for leaving the furniture in the apartment itself.
I don't understand.
In other words, they're not going to lose anything in their security deposit because they left the furniture in the apartment. They put it on your lawn. You're not going to charge them anything, are you?
No, but I mean, but somebody's still got to get rid of it.
It's not their problem anymore, is it?
But it's the landlord's problem.
No, it isn't. It's off his property.
Really? So the lawn doesn't count as the landlord's property?
Not if it's your lawn.
Well, but it is a house that looks suspiciously like a duplex, but is not a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's unclear. Although you're right, they did move it kind of past the middle line.
Once you're a landlord, you learn all these things, just how crooked people really are.
Okay. You know, I know we have to break here, and we've gotten to nothing. But let me just say this very quickly.
The terrorists are winning. Let's say that.
I was in the kitchen this morning with Smokey from Couple, and he made a passing comment. As they say, it was a non sequitur. It was apropos of nothing. He just says, hey, have you ever gone to that place, St. John's? And I said, St. John's, I believe I know that place. And he said, boy, that whole place is just stinky and disgusting. And I just walked into the kitchen, and that was the end of the conversation. And I thought of you, Tim Riley.
As you should.
Okay.
My tenant got a brand new water heater. So I don't want to.
That's what the label says, anyway. Don't peel that off. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. All right. I wasn't even all that upset about it. I had shoved it down inside into a tiny little black ball of hate. Now, it's all come out like snakes out of a can. Speaking of snakes inside a thing, Fat Boy's going to be joining us in the Court of Fat Boy show on KUFO later on today. A little announcement about that film. Or film, as our British friends say. Later on in the third hour of the program, that is the 2 o'clock hour, Scott Daly is going to be here from FilmPeopleRadio.com with a review of World Trade Center and also some other cool stuff. Later on, top 5 rock and roll screams and so forth. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. Joining us from... It claims here on the prep sheet, Nanette Souza, that you are, in fact, in Jerusalem, but that's incorrect. You're actually in Haifa, aren't you?
I'm in Haifa.
All right. How are you today? How's your day going?
My boss obviously doesn't know where I am.
Pardon me?
My boss doesn't know where I am.
Well, that's okay. We've learned that when it comes to CNN and their preparation and advising us of what's going on where, we've learned it. How shall I put this? It's a daily adventure with Laura Caviezel and the gang at CNN. It's a little bit of a laissez-faire attitude towards accuracy in the prep sheet that they give us. But that's okay. We've learned to roll with those punches, Nanette.
Can't believe everything you read.
It is true. Really, it is. Well, the less said about that, the better. I was going to make a whole observation there, but I probably shouldn't. I'll just put that in the can, and I'll do that another time. How is your day going?
Hey, my day was nifty. I went up north closer to the border because this bomb landed over there, killed a couple of people, and they're mourning and stuff, and I understand that. But that aside, that emotion aside, I looked at a 5-story complex, apartment complex, and above that is this satellite dish above there.
Right.
That thing was, I could see sunlight through the satellite dish where the shrapnel hit. That far away. And that woman's stove and microwave, that was out in the road. It was no longer in the kitchen.
This does have a way of putting things in perspective, I suppose. I've been lamenting for the last 40 minutes or so that I had a vehicle. One of my automobiles was stolen last night, and I've been going on a bit of a tear about that today. But I suppose on the upside, my house was not bombed. So there is
exactly.
that. It's a bit of a wash.
Exactly. It was... And when I talk about a house, these aren't track homes like with the siding or mobile home style. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
These are like cinder block homes that are about four cinder block deep and about three stories high. And if, that bomb, it just wadded it up like a piece of aluminum foil.
Now, is it true?
It's just amazing.
Is it true that there's some sort of we touched on this earlier this week, that this, the UN or the State Department, they're going to be proposing some sort of a, hey, you guys, knock it off plan?
They're trying to, and they're still working on it. But Israel said, okay, you guys keep working on it. In the meantime, they're already advancing their troops. They gave the green light for the military to keep going north, let's say from the border, from Lebanon, heading 18 miles north, and it's a river called the Litani River. So the government here has said, okay, UN, do what you got to do, but our troops, they're moving, and so we'll see what tonight brings.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry, we've got a little delay. Is it accurate to say this, to whatever extent you can comment upon this as a CNN journalist? It does seem like there's sort of this tacit understanding that the government, the United States government, that they have to keep up the appearances, as the British would say, of moving towards peace, but they're going to do it slowly enough to guarantee that Israel will be able to get in there and kind of clean house.
You would get that feeling or that view, don't you, with that... We got to wait for Condoleezza Rice to get to New York, and
yeah.
He needs to schedule a meeting, and just want to get things done. And you get that feeling as though Israel's fighting that war for the U.S. You know, in the name of terror. And like I said, follow the money. I don't know why I keep saying that. I just, somewhere along the line, it's about the money. It's going to be about the property and the territory and. You know, he came on TV last night, Mr. Hezbollah, Nasrallah. Yeah, he asked Arabs to leave Haifa so he can start bombing over here. But they threw five rockets this morning.
Are they, are you guys, because I know you and Amanda are over there from CNN, you're covering this, we had talked the other day about how you were in a place where you said they had launched a missile or a rocket, some sort of device, and it had landed 3 seconds from you. Are you guys, are you guys sleeping in a different bed every night? Are you guys moving around, or do they have you, are you still in one place under the theory that one place is as safe as another?
Yeah. We were up on the 16th floor with this gorgeous panoramic view, and we endured and we survived seeing the seven rockets hit there. Okay. So then when Nasrallah made that comment about asking the Arab-Israeli population here in Haifa to leave, so he can do whatever business he wants to do here, it was then that Amanda and I said, how about the first floor, right there where the word shelter reads? How about if it's a suite right there? So we went all the way down to the first floor, and we have our suitcases and the trunks and the radio gear, and she's unplugging, and we are non-engineers, trust me.
Yeah,
she said, cable to me, I'm looking for the remote, but it doesn't happen like that. So trying to hook that up. There wasn't any internet access on one. So now we're back up to five. Now we're resetting it up on five. We get all situated, Rick, I kid you not. Somebody comments and says, oh yeah, that's where the last bomb sit, over there right across the street from you at the zoo.
I know they say that you seem remarkably well adjusted for somebody who's surrounded by falling bombs and incendiary devices.
The bomb?
Well, I mean, you are surrounded by, just this destruction just raining down. You do sound amazingly level-headed and just sort of like you're really rolling with the punches over there.
I want to see what's going on, I suppose. I'd like to see this come to an end and the rockets end, but people don't have confidence in the UN out here. I think they just really want to fight their own war and just shoot everybody on sight. This UN treaty to Israelis and military, and I'm not speaking for them, but they're just like, UN who?
Yeah. No, I really think, look, I'm going to tell you this right now, that we're going to excerpt that out right now. That phrase when you said, they just want to fight their own war and shoot everybody on sight. That really, yeah. as strange as it may sound, I think that is the most accurately distilled assessment of this entire situation that I've heard in quite some time. So, there you go. All right. Well, be safe, Nanette, and we will talk to you sometime in the coming week, I'm sure.
Awesome. Take care.
Thank you. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Nanette Sosa, they're broadcasting perkily.
Sounds like she's starting to have fun out there.
I'm not suggesting she's on any kind of mind-altering substance or mood-altering drug. I'm just saying she does have the bearing of someone who is just so Prozac'd up that she's not even really concerned with the fact that there is fiery doom raining down from the heavens around her at any given moment. So I think at a certain point, what are you going to do?
Did you send her over some Bezo beverages by any chance?
I really should. We should send her an AM 970 shirt to wear. You know what I mean? All right. Mm-hmm. There you go. Here's Tim Riley from the Ministry of Truth.
Well, 19 of more than 20 suspects arrested in connection with a plot to bring down transatlantic airliners en route from Britain to the U.S. have been identified. British Home Secretary John Reeves said the move is typical of what happens when these type of investigations come forward.
As far as the freezing of assets is concerned, the Treasury have informed us that this is a normal procedure. When people's assets are frozen, the names are published.
They froze their assets. Meanwhile, Rick Santorum says...
I'm sorry.
Brace yourself.
Just keep focused.
Because every time he says something, we must listen. He said the arrest of terrorists is just another step on the ongoing war on terrorism, which is not going to end anytime
soon. This is a much more accomplished and difficult enemy than we ever anticipated. And I think we have to come to that realization that these folks are tough, these folks are committed, these folks are willing to die for their cause. In many cases, they want to die for their cause.
Perhaps I am missing something.
You're missing a pickup truck. We know that.
Thank you, Tim Riley. I managed to block that out for about 30 seconds. Thank you for bringing that back in flamboyant technicolor right into my head. Pickup truck gone from in front of a government building. That's it. Scotty was just talking to me about that in the hallway. He's like, hey, sir, your truck got stolen right in front of your house. There's the thing. If it had been stolen, if my truck, which was stolen last night, and you are not listening to a rerun, this is not a best of, you are not listening to some sort of an encore presentation, the same truck that got stolen last time, they don't even have good taste. You know what I mean? I got two vehicles. The truck is, what year is this? 2006? This truck is, it's almost 20 years old, this truck. So I can't imagine what you'd be using it for. Here's the other thing. If they had at least stolen the truck from in front of my house again, you could have some sort of zen-like attitude towards that because you do live in I live in a bad neighborhood. And so you just sort of accept that that's going to happen. The fact that it's stolen from up on the hill by OHSU, how would you even get up there if you don't have a vehicle? Do you know what I mean?
That's why they're putting up the tram so you won't need to anymore.
thieves can relax and dangle their feet merrily off the tram as they get up there to survey the vehicle lot.
Like they're in Switzerland.
Decide what car they're going to hotwire and go home with. So, there you go. So, yes, thank you for pointing that out again, that the truck was, in fact, stolen from me sometime between 7 p.m. last night and 7 a.m. this morning.
There is a brighter note that you've forgotten about. Apparently, we're almost to an anniversary date for this program, for the original program that started on KOTK many years ago.
Why?
Because we're in August, and today is the 11th, correct?
Oh, does that mean so tomorrow? So Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday, be there. So Sunday, August 13th, will actually be the anniversary. Well remembered, Tim Riley. Will be the anniversary of when this program came back on the air following the first unpleasantness. The original unpleasantness, which took place in early 2001, and then this program was brought back on August 13th, 2001. Yes, that is when Tim Riley and I were paired together for the very first time.
Yes.
5 years ago this coming Sunday. This is like that episode of Sports Night. Where Casey, can't remember the anniversary, and then Dan does, and it's the anniversary of their first broadcast together in Texas, and it's all very touching. And then they learn something, and they bond as men. So, yes, you were correct. 5 years ago, this coming Sunday, Tim Riley and I did our very first broadcast together on the old KOTK. I've forgotten all about that.
Yeah.
Because it's also my brother's birthday, and so I managed to forget. I can forget all the dates that are important at once. I just forget everybody I know in one fell swoop. My observation about this terrorist thing was going to be this. Yeah. I am not trying to diminish the importance of the war on terror and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm not trying to make light of this, and I'm not trying to say that we should just have sort of a hands-off policy. I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't care about these sort of things. But perhaps I am missing something in that it does seem like a pretty straightforward and linear proposition. There were bad guys plotting something, they say, so-called, and I guess we have, I won't say we have no reason to doubt them, but let's assume that they're telling the truth. There were bad guys plotting something. We found out about it. Bada bing, we kick in the door. Now they're in jail. I don't understand. I mean, I guess it's a big deal, but isn't it just sort of a give? Don't you just sort of assume that every moment of every day in every corner of this world, there are bad guys plotting things? You know what I mean? There's people who hate America, and I'm not trying to be all, you know, Lars about it, but I mean, that's the case. There's the world is full of nitwits that hate our country for no readily apparent reason. Some of them hate it for apparent reasons. What are you going to do? America's hated by a lot of people. It's what happens. It's what happens when you're number one. There's people who hate you. So, whatever. All I'm saying is, that's just sort of an, it's not like this is a suddenly developed crisis. It's sort of an ongoing situation. There's people who don't like us. They plot to do bad things. We caught them before they did it. Bada bing. Case closed. I don't understand what makes this, and I'm not trying to ask, I'm not trying to provoke, be contrary. Oh, listen, he's being so edgy. He's questioning me. I'm not questioning anything. I just don't understand what makes this is so terribly different. I mean, after the, was it right after 9/11? Didn't they catch some nutcase with box cutters on a train or something on an Amtrak?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, there's a-holes out there doing a-holy things. What are you going to do? All right, here's Tim Riley. Please. I'm sorry, we have more words of wisdom from Rick Santorum, don't we?
Yes, please deliver some evil, Senator Santorum.
We're in a situation right now where we simply don't take the enemy seriously. We don't believe that they are a threat to America. We look at them and say, you know, these are a bunch of people living in caves. I mean, how can they defeat the greatest power in the history of the world?
I don't think all of them live in caves.
No, I'm pretty sure that they don't. In fact, they were in New Jersey last time, and then they were in Florida, and then these last guys were in Britain, weren't they?
They could always go to REI and buy some decent tents.
Exactly.
The money for.
Yes, completely. Or they could be like that kid that just lives at Walmart all summer. So, all right.
And just a reminder, so we don't get too complacent, the president said the skies are not completely safe.
This country is safer than it was prior to 9/11.
Whatever, that's,
we've taken
I believe
a lot
that.
Of measures to protect the American people.
Uh-huh.
But obviously we're still not completely safe. Because there are people that still plot.
Mr. Creedy! I'm sorry. I'm going to spend all weekend pulling V for Vendetta quotes. And we're just going to start slipping them in between Bush observations to see if anybody notices.
Meanwhile, a pregnant woman has been arrested by terrorism police in Britain in her pajamas. The woman who's not yet been named is the wife of a Muslim convert, Oliver Savant. So apparently she's civilized enough to be wearing pajamas like the rest of us. Eyewitnesses describe her as 5 feet tall with braided hair and wearing pajamas. One witness said, I heard a man shout and then the door was knocked in. I looked out the window and saw a team of armed officers wearing helmets and goggles pour out of a black unmarked Mercedes. There were another two vans full of police wearing bulletproof vests. And there were two guys who looked like intelligence agents, whatever they happen to be look like, who were controlling things. And another Ray, the young woman and her 6-month-old baby were taken into custody.
Well, pregnant women are tough.
Meanwhile, Sarah Bernhardt is threatening to fight new security measures at airports imposed after the terrorist attack.
Isn't Sarah Bernhardt dead?
No, she's still alive. Oh, I'm sorry, Sandra Bernhardt.
Okay, I was going to say, Sarah Bernhardt died like 80 years ago.
We do
I
have
think.
Somebody dead to talk about in a few minutes.
Okay.
She's scheduled to fly out of JFK today and is determined to break the rules. She tells the New York Daily News, when I go to the airport and they try to take my Mac plush glass away from me, it's going to be World War III.
Okay, we were just talking about this yesterday, that Sarah has, you wear lip gloss, is that what it's called? Mac lip gloss?
Yeah, among other things.
So embarrassing that I know.
Oh, I thought
things.
It was a computer that she was talking about.
No, we had Sarah dump out her purse yesterday, and you got about, I would say, a fifth of the way through your makeup collection, and it had already exceeded $100. Which is, now maybe you wear a little more makeup, maybe you're a little more stylized than some women.
I like to be prepared.
Well, just for any eventuality. I'm not making fun. I'm just saying that you perhaps carry a little bit more makeup in your day-to-day life than the average woman, but women carry a lot of makeup with them. And, I mean, you start telling women that they're gonna start tossing away some small tube of lipstick that they paid $18 for. There's gonna be hell to pay. I'm not trying to be zany or comedic about this, but I really honestly mean this. Things like this always fall apart because of some regulation like that of having to throw away lipstick. Because here's what happens. What's going to happen is you're going to have some senator, some congressperson, his wife is going to be standing in line at the airport, and there's going to be some guy who's a political player in Washington, D.C., and his wife is going to get dragged into a room, and they are going to throw away a whole case of you know, makeup of hers. She is going to go home, and she's going to read her husband the Riot Act, and the husband's going to go to Washington, D.C., and all of that crap is going to roll downhill, and that's what's going to cause these regulations to ease up. You mark my words. It won't be protests. It won't be people rioting. It won't be demonstrations. It won't be the freaking moveon.org. It'll be some guy afraid that he's going to get cut off by his wife because she had to dump out her purse into a trash can at O'Hare. That's exactly what's going to cause this to happen. It's going to be like that Lysistrata thing all over again.
Meanwhile, there's suspicious packages everywhere. Some turning out to be something, others nothing.
You're all going to die.
Three pipe bombs were found in Salem yesterday. Then a suspicious package was found at the Federal Building in downtown Los Angeles. It turned out to be a bag containing a soggy sweater.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da. All right. These are real pipe bombs in Salem?
Yes.
What were they blowing up, or attempting to blow up? What is there to blow up in Salem?
Well, there are big parking lots and shopping centers and so forth.
Okay.
It's enough to hold people out.
All right.
Meanwhile, the Anti-Defamation League wants to hear from Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney about, apparently, she made anti-Semitic comments.
That's hard to believe.
And a TV crew picked it up during a Thursday night's runoff election, so this woman is demanding an explanation. Number five.
The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world.
None of that
are
happened.
You a Jew?
All right. Let me try this again. I'm sorry.
You mother I'm going to you. What do you think you're looking at, sugar?
All right.
In 2002, there was a similar kind of a thing where her Representative McKinney's father blamed the Jews for her defeat in that event. We never heard any distancing at that point. I'm not sure why we would expect anything different now.
All right, there you go.
My life is
right, thank you. There you go. Well, let's all behold the surprise and shock.
Right. Lou Diamond Phillips arrested early today in Northridge, California. That's a suburb of L.A.
Lou Diamond Phillips? Really? Sarah, who's Lou Diamond Phillips?
He played Richie Valens in La Bamba.
Hey, well done. I didn't think
you'd
know.
My mom's a Spanish teacher. Come on.
Oh,
now.
That's true. No, okay. I guess to me, he's when I think Lou Diamond Phillips, I don't necessarily think La Bamba. I think
Stand and Deliver.
My friend.
Yeah, Stand and Deliver. Good one.
My friends met him in a bar in Canada.
Really?
Yeah, and he was very cool.
Was he bitter about the fact that his wife left him for another woman?
Really?
You don't remember that?
He turned Melissa Etheridge into a lesbian.
It wasn't Melissa Etheridge, it was Julie Cypher.
Oh.
It was Julie Cypher that he was married to who left him for Melissa Etheridge.
Oh, and I got two mixed up.
Which is totally, no, that's one of those things, they are easy to mix up. It's just a lot
I've
of,
just seen pictures of them together. And,
a lot of spiky hair and mud flaps. The thing about Julie, I mean, it's one of those things that's really hot unless you're him. You know, that's one of those situations, if you're anybody else, you're like, yeah, right on, you know, chicks. But if you're him, you're just like, ah, crap, and you just go home, and every night you just want to eat the gun, you know. And he never recovered after that. That's his career. I don't know whether it's because of that thing, whether there's some sort of a public emasculation or whatever that happened. But he, that happened in like 92, maybe?
Yeah.
Around that time. And, I mean, that's right about the same time that people started going, Lou Diamond, who? I don't... Because he was in La Bamba. He was in Stand and Deliver, well-remembered. And he was in Young Guns and Young Guns 2. That's where I remember him from. And I don't think... I can't remember the last movie that Lou Diamond Phillips did. Oh, he did that movie Bats. Did you ever see Bats?
Have not seen
Bats. Oh, it's a terrible film. It looks like it's like one of those Mosquito films. It looks like it ought to have been made for the Sci-Fi Channel. There's a budget of like $4 where you can see the zipper running down the back of each bat. It's a terrible film. And I don't think he ever did anything that anybody ever saw after that. I think Young Guns 2 was the final Lou Diamond Phillips movie that was actually seen by human beings. All right, so there we go. Oh, did we play the McKinney thing?
Yeah, we did.
We did, didn't we?
In 2002.
Why is it always fathers? First of all, why is it always dads in this situation who are always saying things? What did he say? He wasn't another guy who said the Holocaust didn't happen, was he? Oh, I'm sorry. That's not her.
In 2002, there was a similar kind of a thing where her Representative McKinney's father blamed the Jews for her defeat in that event. We never heard any distancing at that point. I'm not sure why we would expect anything different now.
Well, there you go.
You want to do the stepwatch now?
Do we have to break, Sarah?
Well, do we have? Is our next guest at one?
I believe though. I believe that might be that might be Bob Costantini right there.
Oh.
So should we take Bob Costantini or should we break and then have him?
We should probably take Bob and then we can break.
Right. Well, he can relax in the green room for a few minutes. Well,
okay. He's in the Paraguay Lounge. It's 503-733-2970. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, live from the Hill. CNN radio correspondent and chuckler, Bob Costantini. How are you doing?
Chuckler.
How are you, Bob?
I'm doing fine.
What is it with public figures and their crazy anti-Semitic fathers? Did you hear the story we were just talking about with Representative Cynthia McKinney?
No, I just called in a moment ago.
This is apparently, and this is because this, I want you to be up to speed on all the political happenings in this crazy country of ours. So, is this the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League?
Yes.
So first we had that story, the unfolding story about Mel Gibson, whose father apparently said that the Holocaust was fiction. And Mel Gibson's, the best part was how Mel Gibson wouldn't even just come out and cop to the fact that he agreed with his bigot dad about it. They said, well, Mel Gibson, what do you think about your father saying the Holocaust was fiction? And he put on Mel Gibson thoughtful face, and he said, well, my father never told me a lie, or whatever his response to it was. And so now apparently Catherine McKinney's father has blamed, and I'm quoting now, blaming Jews for her defeat.
Yes,
for her defeat.
And he actually did that the first time around.
Right. And so
he lost 2 years ago.
She apparently has opted not to distance herself from those comments.
No, he made similar comments. He's a local politician in his own right. I don't have the information in front of me, but I recall he's a local politician in his own right who has made at times what some people consider to be outlandish statements, and he blamed her defeat 2 years ago to the Jews. he did that 2 years ago when she was defeated after she had said that the 9/11 attacks were known by the Bush administration but ahead of time.
There's a whole crazy just runs in families, doesn't it?
Sometimes, I guess.
That's a whole that's a whole lot of broken chromosomes right there. That's what that is. That's clearly somebody feeding lead paint chips to their children or something. There's got to be. I mean, has somebody checked their home for carbon monoxide? There's got to be some logical explanation for this, or maybe. You know what? Maybe stupid is just genetic. I don't know.
All right.
How is your day going, sir?
It's doing fine. Michael Chertoff, our Homeland Secretary, was visiting Ronald Reagan National Airport a short time ago.
Now, we were talking about this the other day. What did Ronald Reagan Airport used to be?
Oh, it just used to be National Airport.
It was National Airport. Okay, because
yeah.
That's kind of boring.
What is it that became, Bob Hope Airport, Tim?
I think that's Burbank Airport.
Was it Burbank that became Bob Hope?
Because John Wayne is Orange County.
Okay, well, all right. So there you go. So they arrested these guys in Britain. Now, were these guys, they arrested in Britain, they were plotting to blow up all these airplanes, but apparently were these guys British? They weren't British citizens, right? But were they legal residents of Britain at the time?
Well, we're getting reports that they were sort of a combination of each, or a combination of those kinds of factors, but they were largely, from what we understand, all of some sort of Pakistani descent, some sort of ethnicity, a Pakistani ethnicity. That's the best that
maybe Saudi Arabia is outsourcing their terror now. Maybe they taking a little bit of a back door there. When they
arrests have been made in Pakistan, I think it was reported yesterday.
Let me ask you this. After 9/11, there was so much made about the fact that we went into, for example, Afghanistan and then Iraq, even though the majority of the hijackers on 9/11 were Saudis. So with a country like Pakistan, is Pakistan actually helping us in cases like this to round people up, or are they just sort of helping us with one hand and then sort of screwing us with the other hand? What is the general assessment there?
Well, the Pakistani government is considered to be helping in these kinds of terror probes. And Pervez Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, who was initially a sort of described as a military dictator by the United States when he came into power during the Clinton administration, but he has become considered a friend to the United States in terms of the war on terror. So the government, by and large, is, you know, greatly appreciated by the Bush administration for the efforts that they're making. Now, as we all know, including with the idea of finding Osama bin Laden, what happens in some of the hinterlands there is a whole different story. And there's a lot of territory that might be considered out of the control of the government of Pakistan.
Yeah. Well, they said they caught these guys, these terrorists in Britain. They were in the final stages of a plot to blow up these airplanes. What does that mean exactly, final stages?
Well, as we've learned that they were about to carry out a dry run of this a couple of days from now. And what that would have meant, supposedly, is everybody flying on parallel jets, if you will, coming across from Britain to the United States. And beyond that, we're not really being told. And one thing to remember about these probes is that the British have very tight restrictions on what can be reported as far as these investigations are concerned.
Well, because these guys
clamped down the press considerably there.
These guys are just in a basement somewhere being beaten with a hose, probably.
I can't tell you that.
Don't forget the towers
British
of London.
You're not supposed to be doing that kind of stuff.
Well, okay. That's your story, mister. All I'm saying is, look, I mean, we can call a spade here. Obviously, somebody's getting their testicles slammed in a drawer right now as the government tries to figure out exactly what's going on here, because they're kind of freaking out about it, and it would be my estimation, in addition to Dennis Franz, whacking somebody around in a room trying to get the answer, that we are never going to see these airport restrictions lifted, are we? This stuff they started putting onto us yesterday about the makeup restrictions, the liquid and the iPod and the whatever, those are there for good, aren't they?
At least for a long, long time coming.
Yeah,
until we consider this war on terror perhaps to be won.
Come on. We're all grown-ups. We all know that that day is never going to come. We know that either by accident or by design, depending on what one's outlook is, that this is a war that by definition has no ending, but there is no quantifiable or explicable ending point to this, ever.
Yeah, maybe in our late lifetimes, I don't know, but it does seem likely that this restriction, as far as liquids are concerned, lipstick, any kind of paste, to being on carry-on luggage, it's likely going to be staying with us for a while. Now, Homeland Secretary Chertoff said a short time ago that the rules will be tweaked as things go along, and you know, it's one of these things that the passengers have to get into their mind as well, their mindset about what they can and cannot bring on.
Maybe it would help if I just would it help if I just shaved my head and showed up nude at the airport beforehand? Just kind of skip to the end of where we know this is all going to be in 5 years.
Well, you'll have to ask your compatriots there whether they like that idea. I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to help the government with what clearly is coming down the pipeline anyway.
Wear light shoes, too. I mean, that's we've been dealing with for some time.
Seriously, it's so. Can I just tell you this? People accuse me of being very cynical and being very, I don't know, and I don't like to think I'm cynical about it, but it's, I do know, and I hate to say this because I don't want it to sound like I am taking these things lightly or not ascribing the right amount of gravity to a situation, but I know a drastic overreaction when I see one, as I noted, and I'm not asking you to weigh in on this because I know you are Bob Costantini, paragon of objectivity. I am, as much as we've tried to break that down out of you, I'm simply saying this. As I made the observation earlier, ever since the inception of the United States of America, ever since this country was founded, there have been people who disliked this country, there have been people who hated us, there have been people who hated what we stood for, what they thought we stood for, what we did, what people think we do, what we believe, what people think we believe. There are always people plotting against us. I'm not trying to be paranoid, but it's just a reality. There are bad people in the world. Every single day, there's some guy in a room somewhere trying to figure out how to screw America. So these guys came up with a plan. We found out, we stopped them. Bada bing, they're in a cell. It seems, it does not seem like anything that isn't probably happening all the time.
The other end of that coin, and since I'm a paragon of objectivity,
yes,
and
yes,
which is nice to know because yesterday I couldn't spell paragon, now I am one.
Put that on your business card.
But this is a form. This is forms of terrorism that we've not known in this country. It is, you know, forms of terrorism that a lot of other countries are very used to having to deal with and securing themselves from. Of course, in particular, obviously, the Middle East is a prime example of that.
Right.
You do have to wonder, and I whether or not you know, in countries like Great Britain or in more open societies, you know, in Europe and the Scandinavian countries and those kinds of places that tend to prefer social freedoms, you know, what kind of reaction there will be in the long run to all of this.
Well,
and France obviously got a serious taste of some of this terrorism.
I am, and I'm not trying to pretend that I'm a terrorism expert or that I know what the government should be doing or anything like that. And everybody can bring up examples like El Al, which is the Israeli airline, where they don't have these problems because it takes like 9 hours to go through security. And I understand all of that. It just seems that if one is going to follow the logic that there were, I mean, 20 people, there are 5 billion people on this planet. I don't even know what percentage 24 out of 5 billion people is, or how many people fly every year and what percentage of that 24 people is. But it does seem a little bit to me, and I know I am lecturing now and I apologize, but it does seem to me that the logical extension of this, I mean, really, if one is going to say that the government is right to do all of this at the airport, and again, I'm not trying to be a whack job or to put us all in danger, but if one is going to do this at the airport, the logical extension is that the government ought to be doing this at all places of mass transportation. The government ought to be doing this at all places where large numbers of people. Look, how many people are on a plane? A couple hundred most. You know what? There's more. There's three times that many downtown here at a rush hour in Portland, Oregon. So if the logic is that they're doing it where people are gathered, then, you know what? I might as well just get the barcode stamped on me right now, you know?
And of course, there's, you know, so many public transportation places and, you know, trains, Amtrak, passenger service train situations. Truthfully, if you, let's just say you wanted to put up security checkpoints in like the New York subway system, well, New York would practically shut down if people had to go through metal detectors,
right,
and searches of whatever they're carrying. And that's why they've tried to do them randomly. But you know, here in Washington alone, hundreds of thousands of people you know, travel on the metro system each day, coming in and out of town. And so it's just, and I take a commuter train myself from Baltimore. And, you know, I just know what life would be like if we had to have checkpoints at all.
Well, I'm going to make one observation, and then I swear to God I'll let you go, because I know you got other things to do, and you're probably tired of hearing me rant about this.
No problem.
I will say this, though. I will say this, that theoretically speaking, if one were a terrorist or one wished to inflict harm on the United States and one wished to do it in a way that maybe people didn't see coming, because that's the thing, like with 9/11, we didn't see it coming. So they always say, well, look, it's not going to be planes again. The next time it's going to be something that we can't anticipate. I can't think of a much better way to screw a country than to disrupt their economy, which is exactly what this is doing at the airport and exactly what it will do if they continue to expand this to other mass transit. That is going to throw a stick into the spokes of the American economy like nobody can see coming, and that's exactly what I would do. So
they're going to throw the stick in the spokes of the airlines themselves.
Yep.
One other thought before you go. This is the sort of thing, though, that the government hopes the private sector will help in, you know, formulating the technology that'll be necessary to maybe be able to discern when carry-on luggage is scanned.
Well, don't they have that now? Don't they have that thing that they swipe on my bag that says if I've been at home building pipe bombs?
Well, they can do some of that stuff right now, as far as explosives are concerned. If you want to get down to the idea of whether or not you can bring on water and those kinds of things, there's got to be some kind of...
So basically, we're scanning for imaginary weapons now. They basically need a device that will scan for crap they're just making up.
It would be combining chemicals, and that's apparently what was behind this plot.
All right. Bob, I will not subject you to any more of my angry tirades.
My pleasure.
Someone stole my truck last night, so I'm a little edgy now. Anyway.
that's more important to you anyway.
No, it's
for sure.
I don't want to put it that way, but I will say that perhaps I'm a little on edge. Clearly, the answer is to start scanning the retinas of everybody who walks down my street at night. It's for your protection, Bob.
All right.
All right. Enjoy your weekend, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Well, speaking of the private sector, what would be... prevent a manufacturer such as Maybelline from setting up a makeup kiosk as people are getting off the plane.
Well, there you go. Attention, Mac and Maybelline. Sarah, you ought to do that. You ought to just get you know what you ought to do? You ought to get a little makeup kiosk and just so, go sell crap to women after they get off the plane.
I think that's a great idea.
Well, you know, well, look, they already...
So, can you bring your stuff in your carry-on
so
bag?
So, you can check it all.
I never check anything, so no, I'm not allowed to bring anything.
The whole thing, I know we're so late, so I'm just going to go a little bit later
here.
What
part
are you
of the
do?
New war on
no,
terrorism.
Look, and I know there's people out there going, I thought you didn't talk about politics and current events, but you know what? This is the thing. This is what people are talking. Everybody flies. Everybody travels. This is a thing affecting everybody. So I'm not going to apologize for talking about this. We'll get back to talking about boobs and snakes on an MFM plane and so forth. I'm just going to say this. Gone, I believe, because Bob Costantini wouldn't come out and say it. But gone, they're never going to get rid of these regulations. These regulations that they have now, they're here for the next 6 months, probably forever. And so, Tim Riley and I hate to keep pulling the I remember card, but I mean, I don't remember being able to walk up with your pocket change and just buy a ticket and run right on. I mean, I can a little bit, but I wasn't flying.
Rock Hudson meeting Doris Day at the airport.
Totally. Ted Stryker, I'd like one ticket to Chicago. You know, no smoking.
Or O.J. Simpson running through to catch a plane.
Exactly. But you know what I do remember, because it happened, oh, I don't know, 6 months ago, the last time I flew somewhere. You know what? I don't check luggage.
I never
You know why? Because I don't want to have to wait at the goddamn luggage return to get my crap.
Carry
on, baby.
What, like a 50% chance that they're going to lose it somewhere?
Well, that or there's some perv in the back rifling through my underwear. And yeah, and plus I've had luggage lost. I've gotten luggage back where things are broken and damaged.
So I'm not understanding this. So
you're not going to be carrying anything onto a plane anymore.
So
you
we
are
can't
not going to
bring makeup in our purses like
No, you're going to be checking it. You are not going to be look the days and I'm not trying to be alarmist. I think I'm correct and you call me up and tell me if I'm wrong about this. But by and large, you are not going to be carrying things onto a plane anymore. You're not going to be carrying on water, it sounds like. You're not going to be carrying on makeup, it sounds like. Some guy, and I know it sounds like a dumb thing, some guy trying to fly 8 hours, and someone's seen an 8-hour flight, and he's got like his music, and they're like, I'm sorry, there'll be none of that music. You'll be checking that iPod. That's got to be fun. So, I don't mean to be like, give me convenience or give me death, but you know what? I hate to invoke that stupid cliche about, if you do to the death, terrorists win. But you know what? Terrorism, the whole point is not to blow up planes, as you know. That is, as Hannibal Lecter would say, incidental. The point is to terrify people.
And disrupt commerce.
Yes, job done. Mission accomplished. So, Tim is exactly right. It's exactly what I said. This is they haven't calculated this, but this is undoubtedly screwing up the economy. This is completely screwed. And if they continue to do it, and if they do it on trains, if they do it on, can you imagine?
That's just ridiculous.
If they do it on a subway?
So I have to, like, sneak in to be able to travel across the country, like my shampoo.
Oh, don't do that. You sneak it in, you're going to go into a small black bag. That's the other thing. If you try to sneak something in, if you try to sneak in a tube of lipstick, they're going to have you in a small room beating you with a hose.
Well, I just don't even know what to do because you can't just...
No, you can...
But buy it when I get
there? Close your mouth and not think out loud and keep your thoughts to yourself. That's what you can do. You can go along to get along, Sarah.
And sing patriotic songs.
Unity through faith.
Let's break.
Hey, we're going to talk about snakes on a plane, though. And do these guys all want in on this, Scotty? All right. Well, we've got some guys on hold who want to talk about this plane thing, so we'll do that. Because you know what it is? It's what people are talking about. There's no getting around that. Our good friend Fatboy is going to join us from KUFO. Speaking of planes, we will be talking about snakes on an MF and plane. Later on, Scott Daly will be here, and more news from the Ministry of Truth. This is the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Salt Lake State Radio. Do as you're told.